This is the KOTO Community Radio News for Wednesday, March 27th. I'm Julia Caulfield. In today's headlines, remembering a Telluride matriarch. Ute youth return to the mountains with Indigenous Ski Weekend. County Republicans consider their ballot and a mountain weather forecast. Wendy Brooks was a matriarch of Telluride. She was a world traveler, a lover of all people, fierce, a North Star, a doer.
My mother created everywhere she went.
That's Dylan Brooks, one of Wendy's sons.
My mother was first and foremost an advocate for children and working people who are raising children. To her, all the people of the world were one community, and they should all be brought together to make art and to love each other and to do something interesting. Don't be boring.
Wendy Brooks passed away on March 26th at her home in Troncones, Mexico, surrounded by family. She was 84 years old. Wendy Brooks moved to Telluride in 1976, leaving her three sons, Demian, Darius, and Dylan, with their grandmother in New Jersey.
My mom set off to look for the next place we were going to live and drove across much of Colorado and hadn't found her place and was heading towards New Mexico. And she was driving past Placerville, and a barefoot kid of 10 hitchhiked and flagged her down and asked if she could take him to town. And she didn't know where that meant, but thought, sure, I'll give this kid a ride to town, and drove into Telluride. She fell in love with the quirkiness of the town and the beauty of it at once, and she sent for the three of us, and we moved out at the end of August 1976.
That fall, Dylan remembers they had nowhere to live, so they parked their VW van in the Telluride campground. The boys registered in school with the address Site Number 7, Telluride Campground. Brooks had a can-do spirit, a hard worker until the end. Sally Russell, a friend of Brooks, remembers the beginning of their friendship.
Telluride was a very matriarchal kind of society. If you wanted something done, it was a woman that was the person that was going to start making that happen. And I was in awe of Wendy and what she had already accomplished the time she'd moved to Telluride with three young boys.
Brooks helped to create Telluride's Medical Center, the Freestyle Ski Team, the Telluride Science Research Center. But to many, she was most known for founding the Telluride Academy, starting basically in her backyard, according to Russell.
A place for kids to be able to play and yet have some kind of freedom to be who they were and to empower them to be who they wanted to be, who they could be.
Brooks's belief in and passion for those children was endless. Elaine Dimas is a friend of Brooks and former director of Telluride Academy. She remembers when she started the role asking Brooks to help to make sure she knew how to do everything right.
And she did it like without hesitation, just right back in there every day with me, helping me navigate hundreds of families. She had a remarkable memory. I mean, literally, she had every family and child in her head. Never needed to look anything up. If I had a question, she could answer it like at the drop of a hat. Really very, very special. And she never, she was just so generous with her time and her knowledge.
Brooks's legacy of adventure, gumption, and joy is what current Telluride Academy Executive Director Jason Merritt says he hopes to continue.
As the current stewards of Telluride Academy, I think it really renews and reignites and reinvigorates our commitment to doing the very best that we can to continue to realize her vision and to do so with total humility and earnestness.
While Brooks touched the lives of thousands of children, at the center of that world were her grandkids, including Julian Brooks.
My grandmother, Wendy Brooks, she wasn't mine. You know, she was everyone's grandma. And the amount of people that I knew personally that she affected, such a small sliver of the 84 years that she impacted lives. It's incredible that a woman can do that much. And seeing her now at rest, at peace, knowing that she left a world that was lucky to have her, it's a beautiful thing.
There will be a memorial service for Wendy Brooks in Telluride later this summer. The Telluride Academy is setting up a memorial scholarship to support children in the program. Anyone can honor and celebrate Wendy Brooks every day by living a life of love, creativity, and adventure. The first time you hop on skis can be a thrilling experience.
You only get your first, you know, powder day, like one time. You only make your first turns one time. And that's way more special than me as a pro skier who's done it time and time again.
That's Connor Ryan, a member of the Hunkpapa Lakota tribe, professional skier and filmmaker. This weekend, Ryan will be in Telluride as part of an Indigenous Ski Weekend, bringing young people from the Ute Mountain Ute Tribe and Southern Ute Tribe back to their homeland.
My tribe's from the plains to the east of here for the most part. You know, we had names for the Rocky Mountains. We called them Heska. But we didn't spend so much time here. Just in our stories, these mountains are the place that belongs to the Utes. And so for me, I really, you know, try to do all that I can as a professional skier to use my privilege and my platform to help Ute kids get to be up in these mountains, skiing here. And most importantly, just spending time here, making relationship to the place, and deepening their bonds with one another and their culture in these places.
Regina Lopez White Skunk is a member of the Ute Mountain Ute tribe. She lives on the Ute Mountain Ute Reservation in Tawak and is on the board of the Telluride Institute and Telluride Foundation. She helped start Ute Ski Day and hopes the experience can help young Ute people continue to develop a sense of connection to their homeland.
Land back to me is having the honor and the opportunity to be able to put my feet down on the traditional homelands of my ancestors. And just to feel the presence and be in those same places and that space really helps me to understand and to almost in some way, you get to upload all the knowledge of the land and be in the presence of our ancestors in their spirit form right now. And, you know, it's important that we're able to come back to these places.
Ryan notes as a young skier, he didn't see the ways that being Indigenous and being a skier fit hand in hand. He wants to help young Indigenous people feel that connection fully.
The outdoor industry to me represents this way that for us as Indigenous people, we can have stewardship, we can have decision-making power, and most of all, we can have a consistent and constant presence on the land. And that to me is really huge, whether you know, it's that the future people who you know, run ski areas are Indigenous people, or if it's even just as simple as, you know, the future ski patrollers may be Ute kids. I think that's a huge thing for them to start having that idea in their head of how much they belong here.
Lopez White Skunk adds she wants the community and ski resorts to recognize the impact of why they're here now.
The privilege they get to operate, to put their feet down on this land, to do something that creates an economy for the community, also came at a price. And that was the displacement of our people. It isn't that we want to bring that conversation forward in a negative or very volatile way, but to create an understanding and a space to exist cohesively to coexist at different times through the year and to understand what culture means to us. And for the Utes, it was a matter of movement according to season. We may not have always been in those areas 12 months out of the year, but it's how we moved in terms of what resources were available and how best to serve our families.
Lopez Whiteskonk and Ryan both acknowledge the weekend coincides with Easter, a holiday brought by colonization. Ryan says it's fitting to bring people back into the mountains as they come alive.
You know, Easter marking the beginning of spring and spring being that time, I think that, you know, for Indigenous cultures, we'd start venturing back up into the mountains again. Back up into these snowy places that give life as they start to warm up and melt out and come to life again. And so I think there's no mistake that as the mountains come alive again in spring, Ute children returning here and getting to ski is a part of that. And to me, that feels really symbolic, and I'm humbled just to play a little role in empowering this experience.
The Indigenous Youth Ski Weekend will kick off with a screening of Connor Ryan's film, Spirit of the Peaks, at the Wilkinson Public Library on Friday, March 29th at 5 p.m. The community is welcome to join. Throughout the weekend, young Ute folk will be skiing the mountain of their ancestral homeland. The Indigenous Ski Weekend also coincides with Telluride's Latino Dia de Esquí. Early in this election year, San Miguel County Democrats have been focused on local races for county commissioner. The Republican Party, meanwhile, has no commissioner candidates, but they are organizing for the election push with contested primaries for both a seat in the state's General Assembly and the House of Representatives in Washington. KOTO's Gavin McGough spoke with an officer of the party and has more.
Until last October, the San Miguel County Republican Party had no officials and little organization on the local level. But, says Norwood resident Julie McCallan, this doesn't mean they don't exist, just that their focus was elsewhere.
The Republicans seem to be pretty quiet, you know, all busy at our businesses and being productive.
McCallan is one of three new officers for the county's Republican Party who came together last fall to get organized for the coming election season and advocate for local party interests. The Republican primary in June will bring about a number of consequential races, including the State House representative in District 58, which is being left open by Republican Mark Catlin, and the state's 3rd District representative in Congress, which is being vacated by Republican Lauren Boebert. At the outset of March, the San Miguel County Republicans held their caucus in Norwood.
It was well attended. We had our favorite candidate for House District 58, Larry Don Sukla, who's from Montezuma County. He's just fantastic, and he gave a really nice discussion. And then our district attorney, who's an incumbent, came down and spoke with us as well.
Former Montezuma County Commissioner Larry Don Sukla is facing Mark Rober in the race for District 58, which stretches from the Four Corners region through San Miguel and Montrose counties and up into the North Fork Valley. While the San Miguel Republican Party is supporting Sukla in the state race, the party remains undecided for the national representative seat in Congress. The departure of Lauren Boebert has left a vacuum in District 3, with some dozen Republican candidates throwing their name into the ring. McCallan says the San Miguel Republicans will value the candidates who show up.
We had a big forum in Olathe a couple of weeks ago, and it was really interesting to see which of them actually want to represent us and which of them don't. So there are a couple of different ways to get on the primary ballot. You can do it the traditional grassroots appropriate way through assembly, or you can do it through petition. So none of the guys who are doing it through petition showed up at the big forum in Olathe.
Those who petition onto the ballot focus less on the assembly process and more on collecting signatures. Overall, the party's nominating process works as such. At their caucus earlier this month, the county Republicans came together to choose delegates. Those delegates, in turn, determine which candidates best represent the interests of county Republicans. On Saturday, April 6, in Pueblo, Colorado, the delegates from across the state will assemble to vote and determine which candidates make it onto the Republican Party's primary ballot. Then, at the June primary, voters will advance a single Republican candidate to the general election in November. McCallum says the party here in San Miguel County is looking for candidates with proven conservative values. She says,
We really value fiscal responsibility. This kind of deficit that our nation is maintaining is untenable. It can't last. And war is in places that are none of our business. It doesn't make any sense. So we're very interested in getting a handle on the spending in Congress and closing the southern border. Got to close it.
McCallum reports the county's delegates are still considering their options for the congressional candidate in CD3 and will decide who to support for the nomination before the General Assembly in April.
While the weather may suggest otherwise, summer is just around the corner. The town of Telluride will open reservations for the town park camping grounds next week. The first round of bookings will only cover those wishing to camp between May 10th and June 14th. Reservations for later in the summer will roll out in May, July, and August. In order to keep things fair, the town says, individuals are limited to a maximum of 7 nights within a 30-day period and 14 nights throughout the season. Group bookings are not allowed. Of course, the campground isn't available all summer. During the Telluride Bluegrass Festival, Jazz Festival, and Blues and Brews Festival, campers must be attending the festival to get a reservation and go through the festival directly. Reservations for the Town Park Campground from May 10th to June 14th will go live at 9 a.m. on Monday, April 1st. More information is available at bit.ly/TOTCamping. A year ago, in March 2023, Colorado Parks and Wildlife reported the discovery of a bat in Yuma, Colorado, infected with white nose disease, a deadly fungus disseminating bat populations across the country. Now, a year later, CPW is confirming 2 more cases discovered in the state, one infecting a bat in Boulder and another in Longmont. Dan Newbaum, a conservation manager with CPW, notes while it's dismaying to observe the spread of the disease, it's not surprising. 13 out of Colorado's native bat species are susceptible to the disease. CPW notes the decline of bats in the state would have enormous ripple effects on the state's ecosystem and agricultural economy. The disease does not infect humans, but Nabom says it can spread on gear and clothing, so anyone visiting caves or other bat habitats must decontaminate their gear. If you encounter a sick bat, please report it to your regional CPW officer. Learn more at cpw.state.co.us. Friday, March 22nd marked the 3rd anniversary of the mass shooting at a grocery store in Boulder. 10 people, including a police officer, were killed when a gunman opened fire at a King Soopers in South Boulder. Speaking at a memorial service on Friday night, Boulder County District Attorney Michael Doherty said it is an honor to fight for justice for the victims and their families.
And as we prepare for trial in August, we spent a lot of time talking about the day of the mass murder event. But from working with the families, I know that those last moments do not capture the beautiful and wonderful impact that each of them had on so many people and on this community as a whole. And that's why we're here tonight. That is why we're here tonight.
Erica Mahoney's father, Kevin Mahoney, was one of the 10 killed. She was one of several family members who spoke at Friday's event.
No matter where we are in our grief, there will always be bad days. What happened is a big part of who we are and will continue to be forever. But we are here. We are doing our best and we are remembering the good times when we can. And that's what our loved ones would want us to do.
Ahmed Alyssa was charged with 10 counts of first-degree murder and 47 counts of attempted murder. His trial is scheduled to begin in August. However, that date is tentative due to ongoing mental health concerns. State lawmakers are moving forward with a bipartisan bill intended to curb social media's harmful effects on Colorado kids. Sarah Youngren is a Denver-based social worker and school mental health consultant who testified in support of the bill. She says teens don't have the tools to cope with the social pressure to get attention online.
Dealing with this much constant pressure would be debilitating for an adult. For an adolescent brain that is still developing, it can be harmful for their mental health.
The bill would require platforms to provide pop-up warnings on social media's mental and physical health impacts. They would show up when users under 18 spend more than an hour a day on a platform or log on overnight. A legislative committee approved the bill on Monday. It's headed to the Senate for debate. The bill already passed the House. Urban wildlife might conjure images of pigeons, rats, or maybe raccoons or squirrels. But in one neighborhood in Salt Lake City, something surprising roams the street. Rocky Mountain Community Radio's Emily Cohen reports for KUER.
On a quiet street of modest single-family homes, a pride of peacocks struts down the sidewalk. Their hallmark blue and green feathers make them immediately recognizable.
They've been here for 80 years, plus 80 years.
Amy Larson is the unofficial caretaker of the 17 bird flock.
I mean, they love seeds, worms, bugs, fruit, vegetables. So sometimes you have to keep them out of your garden, but I actually do a garden on the side here, so they get kale and things like that. So
Larson says that her neighborhood often gets visitors driving through looking for the birds. She describes the intrigue around the peafowl as the magic of Goshen Street. The males are known as peacocks, and the females are called peahens.
It brings happiness, and it's in the world right now with things being so heavy. It's so nice to have people just pull up and go, oh my gosh, peacocks, how can we take pictures?
The original peafowls were first brought to the neighborhood by Leon and Leon Brown in the 1940s. The couple owned Brown Floral. It was a florist and garden supply store around 5th South and 10th West. Besides the peacocks, the Browns also had a pair of small Japanese deer, a swan, pheasants, and fancy ducks. In a 1947 Salt Lake Tribune article, Leon Brown said kids from a nearby school would come visit his little zoo. Granddaughter Danny Brown lives in New Mexico these days. But she remembers the peacocks and summers spent with her grandparents.
You know, Grandpa had this, I think the word is affinity for beauty and elegance. And the peacocks depict, you know, the elegance and the graciousness of pretty much everything Grandpa did.
The 107-year-old business isn't in the family anymore and has since moved to another part of town. But its legacy lives on in the peafowl descendants that still roam Poplar Grove. Kate Lingle Cowan is the curator of exhibit collections at Tracy Aviary.
They're beautiful. So people want them as pets, but then they realize that they actually can fly, not well.
The aviary has two 14-year-old peacocks. She says the birds can live for up to 25 years. They're sometimes used as pest control. And males are also admired for their spectacular plumage.
They're actually quite hardy animals. They do really well in winter due to their feathers.
Peafowl were domesticated over 2,000 years ago in the Indian subcontinent and Southeast Asia. Cooper Farr is director of conservation at the aviary.
People have had them around for a long time, and they're on all of the continents except for Antarctica.
Known as a pride or ostentation of peafowl, Farr says that the language we use to describe flocks of birds and other animals says a lot about how humans think about wildlife. While peacocks are known for being showy in the Poplar Grove neighborhood, granddaughter Lori Brown Waddell says the peacocks were just part of everyday life.
They were noisy and beautiful and big and like they would let you pass, like if you wanted to walk from the house across the driveway to the back door of the floral to go in and see grandma and grandpa, they'd just look at you and let you pass. I thought every kid grew up with peacocks.
It's not all that different for children in the neighborhood today, some 60 years later. Even with the peacock's resilience, Tracy Aviary's Cooper Farr says there are things we can all do to make urban environments safer for birds.
Plant native plants in their landscape, to treat their windows, not use poison to control rodents because that can really impact raptors that use urban areas.
And just maybe, children growing up in Poplar Grove for decades to come will still get to experience the magic of Goshen Street. For KUER, I'm Emily Cohen.
The National Weather Service forecast for the Western San Juans calls for mostly clear skies tonight with a low around 20 degrees. Thursday should see increasing clouds with a high near 40. Thursday night, there's a slight chance of rain and snow showers with mostly cloudy skies and a low around 30. Winds could gust as high as 35 miles per hour. Friday, there's a 40% chance of snow showers with mostly cloudy skies and a high near 40 degrees. Friday night, there's a chance of snow and rain showers with a low in the mid-20s. This has been the news for Wednesday, March 27th. Thanks for listening. If you have a story idea or a news tip, call the news team at 970-728-3206. We would like to thank everyone who donated to CODO during our Winter Fund Drive. A huge thank you to Madeline Arnold, Mary Borsnick, David Duty, Katie Fraser, Jessica Galbo, Sharon Green, Kira Knapp, Elizabeth McDowell, Anna Sandoval, Trish and Chip Schilling, James Sullivan, Ashley Von Sprecken, John Vogler, Greg Viditz Ward, David Roberts, Yvonne Moser, Heather Liu, Lauren Norton, Dan Houlihan, Peter Gallant, Jonathan and Michelle Foote, Brinley Downs, Crocodile Dundee, Rose and Peter Edwards, Peggy Collins, Jason Corzine, Celine and Scott Campbell, Ruth Bender, Katie Basil, and Andy Frump. Thank you all so much. And now, a personal commentary.
Hey, this is Mary from the Telluride Historical Museum with your Miner's Minute for March 27th, 2024. It is the last week to see the museum's exhibit, Festival Capital of the Rockies, 50 Years of Festivals in Telluride. Don't miss out on the quirky and fascinating history of festivals in the Box Canyon. Where else can you find out which Allman brother is pictured feeding a mountain lion ice cream in Town Park? We will be closing soon with our last day of the season being April 6th. Until then, we are operating our regular business hours, open from Tuesday to Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. with last entry at 4:30 p.m. And remember, Saturdays are always free for locals. As we look forward towards the summer season, we are looking for a sponsor for our very special and favorite Senior Mahoney Day in August. If you are interested, please contact the museum at 970-728-3344. Or drop us an email at info@telluridemuseum.org. We look forward to hearing from you. We hope to see you up the hill on First Street soon, or you can follow us on social media to keep in touch with what's up at the museum. Thanks, Kodo. You're a rare medium. Well done.
Opinions broadcast over KOTO are those of the speakers. You're also invited to express your views after the news or on Access each weekday at around 4 p.m. If you would like to comment, please contact a staff person here at Kodo. We encourage you to speak out on important public issues.